31. Bolts of Anger. The boy was much changed, larger, older, and scarred. But Modo knew him. Oppie was 10 years old the last time he'd seen him, just a year and a half ago. Yet today he looked 16, if not 20. By what little Modo could see of his body in all that metal, he guessed Oppie was at least 6 feet tall.
"Do I know you, sir?"
the dragoon asked. Such politeness seemed odd coming out of something so large and powerful. "Oppie, it's me," Modo said, then nearly smacked himself for being such a dunderhead. Modo had been wearing a mask the only time they'd met face to face, after the association had brought down the Clockwork Guild's giant, constructed of children. Before that, Modo had rented a room at the Red Boar, and Oppie had brought his meals to his door. Modo had not wanted to show his face, so he had entertained the boy by reading to him through the keyhole. What name had he been using back then? "Ah, yes. It's Mr. Wellington," Modo said. "I'm Mr. Wellington. But my real name is Modo." The man was silent, measuring.
"I've never seen your face before, sir."
"I wouldn't pull your leg, Oppie. You brought me pork buttons and ale every night. Don't you remember?"
"I think I recognize your voice. It's a pleasure to see you, sir."
His lower-class accent was gone. He'd changed so very much in such a short time.
I don't understand," Modo said to Mr. Socrates.
"Oppie is a dragoon now," he said.
"You may return to your duties, Trooper Entwistle." "Thank you, sir."
With a clanking of gears, he saluted, clicked his helmet into place, then strode smoothly away, his metal suit hissing. His back was protected by several plates. "We added to the guild design," Mr. Socrates explained, "stealing the pattern from their giant. We also dredged up Fur's body from the Thames. There wasn't much left of his flesh after the fish had had their way, but his coal-fired arms and legs were intact, a true marvel."
"It really is astonishing," Modo said.
"The dragoons can travel absolutely silently for short periods, using their electric batteries. But once their steam engines are fired up, they can burst through brick walls or scale the highest cliffs. They are bolted to the structure using the shoulder bolts Dr. Hyde had already inserted into the children. We had to extend them again, of course."
"You extended the bolts?" Modo echoed.
"I thought you'd find a way to cut them off." "For the others we did, but not the dragoons. It was the only logical thing to do."
"Good Lord," Octavia said. "Is that Esther?"
One of the cavalry soldiers had removed her helmet to reveal short red hair. Octavia, too, had known one of the children in the Clockwork Guild's giant.
"Yes," Mr. Socrates said. "Lance Corporal Esther McGravin."
"I thought you were going to return them to their parents," Modo said.
"We did." Mr. Socrates leaned on his walking stick. "At least to those parents we could find. And when we couldn't find parents, some of the children became robust enough that they could work on farms in Canada or Australia. They are doing well. Others died within a few months. Failed livers and such. We discovered the causes through autopsies. There were 57 children who made up the giant. 12 of them were altered permanently by the tincture they'd been given, and could not adapt to civilian life." Modo watched the dragoons march in formation, felt their metal feet shaking the ground.
"Altered in what way?"
Octavia asked. "It accelerated their growth and their age. Each of those soldiers is over 6 feet tall. They're all aging before their time. A week is the equivalent of a month for them."
"So how long before they die of old age?" Modo asked.
Mr. Socrates sighed.
"We don't know. They also have some deep physiological problems. They are unpredictable and possibly dangerous. Oppie, for example, twice attacked his mother. They need constant supervision and extremely clear goals to keep them focused. It became clear that only the association could care for him and the others."
"This is caring for them?" Modo asked.
"You've turned them into war machines."
"I don't like your tone, Modo. Each of them chose to come here."
"How long have they been at this camp?"
Octavia asked.
"For 8 months. We couldn't keep them in England. There are too many prying eyes and squeamish hearts. And this is absolutely top secret. Even those soldiers in Esquimalt are not allowed on this base." And why are you showing them to us? Murdo asked.
Because they will strike the blow that shatters the Clockwork Guild.
Of course. So Mr. Socrates did have a plan. But what a plan!
Modo's mind could not process what he was seeing.
Mr. Socrates led them back to the tents.
Had the child soldiers stayed here through the winter? Modo wondered. The tents had little more than cots and a brazier. He could only imagine how harsh the winters would be. It seemed almost cruel.
As cruel as Ravenscroft.
These will be our lodgings for the remainder of October and likely November, too, Mr. Socrates said, pointing at four separate tents.
We're just going to sit here? Murdo asked.
Do you have a better suggestion? Mr. Socrates asked.
Shall we jump on a raft and paddle off in search of the Clockwork Guild?
Have you any idea exactly how big the Pacific is?
You said you aren't certain that they're even in the Pacific.
Mr. Socrates grabbed Murdo by his lapels and pulled him into a tent.
Your insubordination is becoming rather tiring, he said quietly. I did not raise you to be a thorn in my side.
Mrs. Finchley raised me.
Murdo.
There was a sadness in his master's eyes.
I am not your father.
I know you want to find your mother, and perhaps you seek to avenge that French girl's death.
But believe me, anger only leads to rash decisions. I learned that the hard way. Allow me to do my job, and you will be able to do yours.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Socrates let go of Modo's lapels.
And, Modo, don't feel you have to hide your face here. The soldiers have been prepared. No one will stare at you. You are to feel at home and conserve your energy. Very soon, we will be going to war.